Welcome to Team Muscle Radio. It's the very first episode and you're here with Brian the Heart Harris.
Good
and
afternoon.
Robert the Classic Craig. The purpose of the show, we want to bring bodybuilding radio to the UK. We're going to give some contest coverage each episode. We're going to give some interviews. We're going to give some up-to-date information on what's happening in the forum, what's happening in bodybuilding in general. And basically it's going to be no holds barred, no bullshit. And if you want to find out more information, you can check out the website, which is www.testosteronemuscle.co.uk. There's a blog attached to that. There's a Facebook. And you can send us an email with a bit of feedback to robert@testosteronemuscle.co.uk. So, this episode, we're going to be covering a bit of the NABBA Brits. We have an exclusive interview with the one and only Lee Priest, who is covering a bit of his recent VPX, shall we say, firing or layoff. We have Ian Sturrock chatting to me for a while, and he's got some really, really good controversial information on his gear use, which I think a lot of people will find very, very surprising, to say the least. And to finish off, we've got an interview with Paul George, fantastic contributor to the forum, and again, he's got some good information that people might find interesting along the lines of his GHS. Okay, so straight on to the NABBA Brits coverage. If you take a look in the forum, you can get the full show report. You'll see the winner, Anthony Bales.
Anthony Bales.
Anthony looked incredible. He's got some pretty awesome muscle bellies. What did you think of his conditioning and his overall package, Brian?
It was pretty fantastic. There's very few weak points you can pick in Anthony. It's a long time coming for the guy. He's really, you know, you can see the amount he's came on in the last 3 to 4 years has been so consistent.
What did you think of his conditioning?
His condition was, you know, it was really, really good. You know, I suppose if you could pick hairs, there's probably, you know, places you could have, you know, argued that he could have been a touch sharper, but I think it's probably the best package choice he could have brought to the stage. He was very tight, he was very full. You know, there's not a lot I could really add to that.
In terms of one thing that we did notice when we looked and talking about splitting hairs here was from the back, the hamstrings, the glutes. You feel that's maybe the area that you could maybe be looking to kind of bring up a wee bit.
Yep.
I mean, across the back, he had fantastic thickness across his rear double bicep pose.
It's a showstopper. Yeah, it's a showstopper.
So what did you think, though, maybe just for the lower half of the back?
Absolutely. It looks as if maybe, you know, the skin could be a wee bit thinner, you know, just that wee last, you know, maybe 5% and more. Again, you know, to achieve that really, really grainy condition, you know, it's how much more does it need to come down to get there? What else is going to be sacrificed?
Yeah, what you're sacrificing, exactly.
Was it maybe, you know, a better choice to go for the look that he brought, which is, you know, again, splitting hairs, you know, because it's a fantastic package that he did bring. But it would be interesting to see, you know, if he was to push that step further, you know, what the final outcome of that would be, how it would look.
So how do you think going forward for Anthony to the universe, which I'm guessing he's going to be doing, because we've both seen him at the universe before, it was outstanding. How do you think he needs to improve, maybe? Or do you think that package that he brought, do you think that package is enough to get him top three, top six?
Absolutely, a top three place in there. Again, you know, keeping in mind it really is the cream of the crop at the universe. Some of these guys' condition that they bring is mind blown. Again, you know, you've got the very best of the genetic amateurs there on the planet. So again, in my mind, if I was in his shoes, I'd definitely be looking to replicate the condition that he brought. You know, I emphasise again, maybe just that touch more, a little touch harder. It's certainly dry enough. You know, it's a hard one to call. I know Anthony in the past himself has had you know, question marks over what kind of package should he be. Maybe a slightly tighter, but possibly flatter, or perhaps that would be a little bit fuller. But you know, I think, you know, even if he was to bring the package that he had there at Brent, certainly be, you know, you wouldn't argue him winning his class at the universe, perhaps, and overall, you know, you don't know who's going to show in the day, but
excellent,
certainly a worthwhile winner if it is.
So moving on to other class winners, you've got in class one, you have got the absolute monster in Lucas Gabriel. The guy's dealt
a giant. Yep.
I mean, we know the fella that came fifth, Stuart Bateman,
and
he's got huge shoulders.
Oh, in real life, he's a behemoth.
But you put him next to Lucas, and he just looked
smaller. yeah, absolutely.
So where do you see Lucas going at the universe?
Lucas, he absolutely needs to bring a tighter package. I don't think to date Lucas has brought the kind of the absolute condition that he needs to the stage.
So you think he's winning just more in
size and shape? You know, he's
got fantastic shape.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got this. Enough size and shape to pull it through. Certainly, obviously, he's just took a class 1 win against guys who were arguably better conditioned than him, not quite carrying the same amount of mass. But yeah, if Lucas could bring that condition, improve himself maybe another 10%, he could really a really good class 1 win at the universe there, potential. Yeah, he's certainly not going to be outsized, that's for sure. And again, which is unusual in a class 1 guy, the shape that he carries. It's unusual to see a guy of that size, that stature, with nice flowing lines and such things.
Yep. One person who you also mentioned earlier is Andy Jameson, who is class 2 winner.
Andy Jameson, you've got to admire that guy's physique. Yeah, his upper body is just fantastic. He's like a caricatured superhero.
I've got to say, when you look at his upper body from the front, standing in a kind of front relaxed, it's actually one of the best physiques.
Yeah,
top half of the front.
Yep, absolutely.
On the stage, I think that I seen that day.
His his shoulder width, his muscle bellies, everything flows. The man's got a very confident stance about himself as well. Again, another good poser. Unfortunately, obviously, it falls away a little in the leg department, the lower body department. It's no secret. It's a shame we can't see that being brought up. I don't know what the reasons for that is.
Injuries, genetics
could be. It would be good to be able to bend the guy's ear maybe one day and ask him himself. But
hopefully we'll get some feedback from Andy Jameson, from Lucas Gabrius, Anthony Bales. We've been trying very hard to get Anthony Bales, but obviously, as you can appreciate,
given he's just taking over all his life, very hectic.
He's rather busy. Class 4, we had Ricky Moore. And
another guy that had a pleasing shape.
For a class 4 guy, he had a really, really tight waist.
Didn't he come across as that stumpy, kind of stocky look that can plague many of the class 4 competitors? Very streamlined, I guess you'd say. A nice combination of condition, shape.
One thing about class 4 guys is they're so fucking short that they don't have really much of a chance to be streamlined.
Maybe they missed it with the glass. You just made yourself another one in the hate list, mate.
So I would say for class 4, also one thing that stood out was his abs, how symmetrical and how pleasing for the front he is.
Very nice, very pretty physique to look at for that respect.
And the only thing I maybe say is at universe level, has he got the back?
That's certainly a point that I would say. Like, I'd say his back, his arms, the two areas that most noticeably need to come up. More so back width there, and there's plenty of back detail there.
Yep.
But certainly the back width, his arms, yep, that's, I would say, need to bring them up markedly to go up against, there's many beasts at the class 4 universe level.
Okay. And for the ladies, for the overall, we had Pam Higgins, a very, very pleasing, kind of streamlined, classic looking female
physique.
Absolutely,
harking back to what we've been seeing for NABBA years gone by. Again, a nice combination of enough condition. She had cracking quad separation. Our abdominals were really pinging. Really pleasing shape. Lovely presentation. A nice level of muscularity.
Do you like the way that NABBA seems to be taking the women back to kind of more classic, more kind of looking for more kind of Tanya Knight type style physiques?
Absolutely.
Moving away from the big blocky females who we've seen the last year's universe been heavily penalised.
Yeah, they were getting borderline physique there, where there's nothing wrong in that. It certainly doesn't. It doesn't run with the lines of the class. It is nice to see them pulling it back, to the original class outlines.
I think one of the reasons probably for that is it's because big female muscle just isn't marketable. It isn't, you can't sell it.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, obviously it's a big point of contention in the sport across all federations right now. That there's a bit of a lost way in what they're actually looking for in the female figure, be it tone figure, be it body fitness for UKBFF, and it would just be nice, it's been a big subject matter in a lot of forums recently, if the girls could just know, what it is they're aiming for and see it being judged you know, systematic across the board that way. You know, seeing them being consistent in their judging, and hopefully, you know, we'll start to see the beginnings of that here again in NABBA.
Yep. Well, we'd love to hear from any of the competitors. Everybody that competed at the NABBA, just drop us a line on email. Come visit the forum, get some input. We've got quite a lot of guys from the forum who competed at the NABBA, very notably somebody that's a friend of ours, Catherine Reid, who goes by the name Whisper.
Whisper, yep.
She got fourth.
Fantastic result there.
She came to our gym, when was it, about 5 months ago?
Yep, October last year, thereabouts.
And I don't think she'll mind us saying, but she was, at that point, looked nothing like how she turned up. It was an incredible transformation.
Absolutely, she was a big girl.
So to Catherine, that was absolutely fantastic, really, really well done.
And a good luck, you know, you're doing the Worlds, you know, so...
Oh, that's pretty fantastic. Another person who posts on Test Muscle, but also... on UK Muscle, and I'd imagine he posts a bit in Muscle Talk as well, just to include all the forums. It's Paul Scarborough.
Yep.
It's Paul's 8th year in the trot competing. Yep. He's won his area show 8 years in the trot.
Undefeated.
He turned up at his show a few weeks back, and both of us commented that he was certainly a bit soft for the back still.
Yep. Yep.
But looking at the pictures, I mean, he really did pull
he's
it in hamstrings.
I think the package Paul brought to the Britain was really quite improved over what he had there, his qualifier. Particularly, yes, for behind his hamstring glute area, and also from his chest area, which I think has been a notable problem. Paul would admit himself, and getting that, the fullness that he needs to, you know, fill his pegs.
I think really for Paul, it's a huge, huge well done to
this is a good, it's a good swan song. It's a good exit of
the career. Fantastic achievement.
Obviously, it's not over yet. He's got the Worlds and a universe out to do before the year's out, and then it's into his old man's judging chair.
hopefully, we'll hear more from Paul in the coming days and weeks in the forum, and
I'm sure
hopefully we'll catch up with him on the phone. Another fella, Aaron Hudson, who posts in the forum. He's quite new to the forum,
yep,
and
new in the scene, a beast of a man.
He's a pretty big fella. He get fourth in the first timers, which is, I mean, an awesome achievement. The first timers class, as you know yourself, it is bloody hard.
Yep. We haven't actually seen any pictures of the first timers class as of yet, but going on what we know that Aaron looks like, it must have been a damn hard class.
Yeah.
The guy, you know, for a guy of such a young age, such stature, the condition that he certainly looked to be packing 2 weeks out. You know, the size, he certainly, you know, has a very pleasing shape as well. So, you know, a very, very impressive package altogether. Not a bad impact into the sport, it has to be said.
Excellent. Another person who posts kind of infrequently, but he has about, is Rick Hall, who took second place in the novice, and I know actually we just discussed, he'd actually, if you'd like to tell us, Brian, he approached you, didn't he?
Yeah, he approached me a few years ago on another forum and asked about, you know, off-season coaching and prepping and whatnot. I'm interested in contest prepping, and my opinion to him was that I didn't really think he had what it took. How wrong can one man be?
So there you go. So Rick, if you'd like to get in touch with us and just get it right fucking up, Brian Harris, please get in touch with me, because I'd love for you to do that, because honestly, I hate him as much as you do. So next up is an interview that we did the other day with a man whose reputation precedes him. It's none other than the Blonde Myth, Lee Priest. Lee had a few interesting things to say regarding competing again in the 212 class, hopefully, and covers a few other issues with recent VPX spat. So here's our interview.
How are you, man? It's Robert Craig here calling from Team Muscle Radio.
Hey, how are you?
I'm really good, mate. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us. It's fantastic you get back to me so quickly.
No problem.
I'd just like to give you a call today and go over, obviously, the recent events with the VPX firing or layoff. Would you give us a wee bit of comment on that? Because I know you've already mentioned it on the forums. But
it's not anything to tell. Not as exciting as the people on the forums making out to be, you know. It's just like, you know, got back with the contract. It says I can do terminating. Every contract you're getting, bodybuilding, it's always on the side of the company you're with generally, so, but this one just states it, you know, within 30 days, if they give you written notice, they can cancel your contract for any reason whatsoever. So I guess they just decided that, you know, they were making cuts and laying people off, and I guess I was one of the people that got laid off. So, you know, it's nothing like, you know, people try to think, oh, Lee's going through contracts and that stupid Aaron Singerman carries on like, oh, Lee's going through so many, you know, he's going through so many companies. But I've been in the sport for over 20 years, you know. The only company I got laid off from was Infinite Labs because I had a falling out with the owner over something that was written into the contract that he signed, and then later on he didn't agree to it, so they let me go, but I didn't mind that because I didn't want to argue with them the whole time. And then Muscletech, I had a three-year contract with them, but I got out of that one myself because I didn't like all the bullshit and the lies that they were always saying. So after 8 months, I got out of that one, and then all the other ones like ProLab, Twin Lab and all them, my contracts just ended and basically got brought out by different companies and they wanted to resign me. I just never resigned because I got a better deal somewhere else. And even Muscular Development, you know, when I went to sign with VPX, they sent me a new contract, but I didn't want to resign it because they were trying to restrict me too much on what I could say. So I signed with VPX. So like I said, I've never really been laid off or fired from any of them. I just chose not to resign or just moved on to a different company. So all these rumors that Aaron Singerman comes up with and everything else are just, you know, make me laugh.
So now that you've left, there isn't any bad blood with you and John Romano. It's all just business as usual. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think I'm still with, you know, I've still got two, I'm with VPX until the 21st. I still have two more radio shows to do with them, which I'm doing one this Friday, and the last one will be the following Friday. But yeah, even in the Adelaide Fitness, so you know, things change, and you know, if something changes up further in the future, I'm more than happy to re-sign me back. So that right now, they're just, yeah, you know, companies just downsize, I guess, and lay people off to save money or do whatever. So,
yeah, it's no big deal. One of the main rumours on the UK forums was, I took with a little pinch of salt, was that you're going back to the IFBB and going to compete in the 212 class. Is there any truth in that?
No, not back in the IPV. I sent Jim Mannion a letter a month or so ago just asking what was my standings with the IPV because I wasn't suspended anymore just come 2010. I'm like, well, I don't know when I'm going to compete again, so I just never renewed my pro card, but I'm not suspended or anything, but, you know, maybe they don't like some of the things I say on the radio shows, but, you know, just being honest, but I haven't attacked anyone verbally or, you know, going out of my way to abuse people. So I'm not sure what this. I sent him an email like a month ago just saying, you know, where am I standing? I'd like to talk to you about maybe coming back to do a 212 class or something like that, but I haven't heard anything back yet from him, so I don't know whether that's good or bad, but not back in the IFBB as of this moment, no.
So if you did, though, would you like to do one of the Europe classes like the Arnold in Spain or possibly the...
Yeah, maybe go back into the IFBB. I would do. My contest would be mainly in Europe. I don't know if I'll get back to the States to do IFBB shows just because I think a lot of the judges in the States don't like me. So, you know, when I go to FIBO or when I was at the Arnold last year in Spain and that, all the IFBB officials from all the other countries like me, but the officials from America don't like me. So if I'm going to, you know, have some sort of a fair shot, I guess I'd have to go to do the ones like the... Maybe the one in England, if they had the 212 there, the one, I think, Sharu Classic in India is going to have a 212, and then the Arnold in Spain. So it would be a show probably in a European country somewhere.
Well, in October in the UK, that's when the Grand Prix will be, and I'm pretty confident there's a 212 class there, and you're a huge fan.
I wouldn't mind doing that one, because I was giving Flex Lewis a hard time about doing the one in England, so... He's like, don't do it, don't do it. I said, no, I said, you always want to compete against me, so I'll give you the opportunity. They let me back in, you can compete against me. I said, big deal. I said, if I win, I win. I said, if I don't win and you beat me, I said, big deal, you beat a 40-year-old man. Good on you.
Well, that's one thing, that's one of the main topics as well in the forum off the back of you, off the back of the rumours you may be doing the 212 was whether you would beat Kevin English and Flex Lewis. And the kind of main opinion is, if Lee Priest come back, how he looked, and maybe could even come in just slightly heavier, because I believe that your weight's run about 206 in stage. You would be giving those guys a hard time, if not wiping the floor with them.
Yeah, like I said, I could probably, I could probably beat Kevin English. You know, Flex is a good body, really has good size and shape and symmetry, so, you know, it's really hard. Like I said, I'll be 40 and you'll still be young, so it's like, you know, maybe back in my heyday, he wouldn't beat me, but now I'd probably be a closer match as I'm getting older. So it'll be interesting, but, you know, it'll be good for the fans. And like I said, as long as I could come back in great condition, I wouldn't have a problem being beat, you know. So like I said, I'm not going back to win or lose or to try to do anything. I'm just give me something to, you know, train for. I've been training 6 years now every day still. But, you know, it's hard. If you don't have that goal some days, it's like, oh, fuck it, I don't feel like going to the gym. I don't feel like doing this and miss meals. So I had that goal again to get back in shape, which, you know, give me something to train for. And like I said, I'd be going back for the fans. As I've told the promoters of any show, you know, if I was lucky enough to place in the money and I won some money, I just said, you know, the promoter of the show can give my money to whatever charity it is, because I'm not going back to do it for the money or anything else. I'd be just going back to compete for the fans again, and that would be simply it. Just a goal for myself to get in shape and just have the fans see me on stage maybe one more time.
So, talking about like how your training's going, I remember seeing a couple of pictures of you in your bathroom. It must have been about 3 months ago. I think you were sitting about 250, and you were in really, really good shape. You had full abs, and you said you had been off gear for maybe 4 months at this point. So how are you looking now compared to that?
Pretty much the same, maybe a little smoother because I'm eating a bit more ice cream and stuff, but not different from that. So, you know, I'm still staying around the, you know, just fluctuating depending. Like some days I'll eat 6 meals a day, some days I eat 2 meals a day, you know, just one of those things. If I go eat Kentucky, I feel sick for the rest of the day, don't eat any more food. So I'm fluctuating between 240, 2 pounds and 250, just like I said, up and down. Half of it's just probably, you know, fluid water weight. You know, you lose some water one day, then you back up and be puffier, but, you know, just been staying around there the whole time.
And then on that note as well, I know you've had a few problems with your shoulders over the years, so how are they holding up? How would they hold up through a contest?
Not too bad. You know, I mean, I have like little injuries sometimes, the knee hurts or the lower back, or the shoulder, you know, that I injured and ripped it off and had it operated on. You know, some days it's really good and some days it's bad. So as far as training goes, I always try and train as heavy as I can, but I just go by instinct and listen to the body. You know, if I go to the gym and everything feels great, I go as heavy as I can. If I go to the gym and just have that day where you just know it's not going to be a full-on heavy workout, I just go a bit lighter and do something different. So that way I'll train no matter what, but, you know, sometimes you just can't go balls to the wall every day in, day out. It's like, you know, when you're younger you can, but as you get older, I guess you get a bit smarter. But then again, I couldn't be too smart if I'm still fucking doing this.
Excellent. Well, one other thing I'd just like to ask before I let you go is on Paul Dillette's Federation. I know that you had a lot of discussion with Paul. You're very good friends with Paul for your background and history. How's that looking? Is there ever a chance you'll compete in Paul's Federation? Has that fell through?
Maybe not this year. You know, the option's still there. I still talk to Paul. So if I was going to do it next year, I'd probably do it. But, you know, if I did that, that would probably make the IFBB more ticked off of me. So,
yeah,
you know, I'll give the IFBB one more chance. If they let me in, I'll do that, then that'll be it. But if they don't, well, then next year it'd be Paul's, or even, I've even considered, you know, going NABBA, but NABBA cancelled the Pro Universe again, I know, this year, so God knows if they're going to have it next year. But if your voice comes to worst, I could always go back and do the NABBA amateurs and do the Masters in that.
Yeah, well, that could be quite an upset. Lee Priest turning up to do the NABBA amateurs and then do some damage.
I'd have more to lose if I go back to another amateurs and get beat by amateurs. But, you know, one of those things, as long as I can get back in, like I said, it's more of a goal. Like I said, it's just easier to get in shape when you've got a goal to aim for. So,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things where, do I really want to do it, or do you just retire now and say that's it? But I don't know. I feel like I've maybe got one more or a couple more shows left in me. And if I can get the, like I said, the physically I'm okay, it's just that mental. If I'm not dieting for 6 years, just getting that tunnel vision back for like 14 or 16 weeks where it's just sleep, eat, train, cardio, sleep, eat, train, cardio, and you just block out the outside world, have no social life for 4 months. I think that'll be the hardest thing for me. The physical cardio training, and that doesn't bother me, but just going back into that where like a robot for 4 months, that'll be probably the hardest thing mentally.
Yeah. Well, Lee, thanks very much for speaking to me this morning. I really appreciate you taking the time and getting back to me so quickly.
No problem. I hope you get back over to England and that sometime soon, because I always like it over there, and I was tipped off that I got sick and couldn't make it to the Body Power Expo, but, you know, I've always said I like it over there because people have tattoos and are just as fucked up as me, so I fit in quite well.
Thanks very much for speaking to us, Lee. Speak to you later, man.
Okay.
Okay, mate, so what do you reckon about that interview with Lee? It was pretty cool speaking to him.
Pretty awesome. You know, guy has calibre.
It's one of those moments where you kind of you start speaking to somebody that you've looked up to through all those years.
A little bit starstruck.
And your arse collapses.
Especially with a guy that's renowned for pulling no punches, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, kind of, the things that come out of that, there wasn't really an awful lot regarding the VPX. It looks as if it's just one of those ones where you got all the forum shit, yep. And it's just been a simple case of
rumours have grown arms and legs.
Aye, and he seems to. I don't know who follows the stuff with Aaron Singerman, but they basically fucking hate each other. He had posted a lot of stuff saying that Lee had been sacked for all these different places, and if it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, and it's a duck, which is a kind of statement Lee's famous for saying. So that's kind of. That was part of that. Lee had also suggested that Aaron's unborn child would be better off dead than having him as a father. So that's part. So that's why they hate each other. So just kind of clearing that up for folk who are not really aware of that side of things over across the water. One of the kind of main points for me was, how do you think Lee Priest would fare in the 212 class?
That would be an interesting sight to behold, wouldn't it? Obviously, the vast majority is remember him at his best. The biggest question there would be, can he reproduce that? Has he lost anything? Obviously, you know, he's getting a bit older, but it seems to be, certainly for pictures that we've seen in recent times, that he's one of the guys that's keeping it together. He's certainly going to be more than competitive. I think probably, again, what would be Lee's make it or break it would be if he could get right down to that condition he had in the, you know, sort of mid-90s. When he was winning his pro shows and he was holding his own against, you know, the likes of Yates and etc. Because as a given, he's got more than enough size.
How do you think? I mean, Lee comes in around about the 206 mark, same height as Flex Lewis. But do you think Flex Lewis, obviously, is a bigger guy? He's maybe around the same condition, like walking about 220, when he's not crazy dehydrated.
It's quite significant. It'd be interesting to see the two of them standing next to each other for the fact of structural difference. It's going to be a number one. Lee's not certainly not the widest of guys. Flex does have quite a wide stature. You take into different, you know, Lee's obviously got a sort of long torso going on there, you know, stumpy legs. You know, Flex is quite proportionate for a guy his height. You know, you turn it around, look at it from behind, you know, they've both got similar weaknesses in their back, and that you know, they could probably both be doing with a bit more thickness to take it on. You know, who's got the more detail? Who knows?
And in terms of chest as well, that's one thing they both. When we've seen Brian and I both seen Flex Lewis recently guest posing, and one thing that did, I mean, for me, obviously, it stood out, it was awesome. I mean, yeah. The guy is just carrying a phenomenal amount of muscle, and he looked great. But one thing that really stood out is chest thickness, just isn't there.
It seems to be pretty, it's quite.
And that's a similar thing with Lee, maybe, as well, you could say.
Yeah, I mean, in Lee's case, obviously, his arm development is so overpowering.
His arms are just awesome.
And, you know, in a similar way to kind of Phil Heath type of thing. Flex, you know, whilst he has got that phenomenal arm and development, it's a different sort of weakness, I would say, he has. It's kind of shallow. It's, you know, lack of thickness and that kind of thing. He's certainly got the chest width and, you know, the nice shape and whatnot. So it's a kind of swings and roundabouts there when they're both got carrying a similar weakness there.
So it would be good if we could, in future episodes, get a wee rebuttal from
that,
Flex.
That would be good, you know.
But even possibly Kevin English, if we can get a across the pond conversation, because as you hear, Lee reckons that he can take him.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what these guys think and that sort of thing. He's obviously asking him to bring it to the plate.
Yep.
It's very possible, you know, that he could maybe step up in perhaps the British Grand Prix. It's a level stomping ground for them, you know.
One thing that comes out that was mentioned in the forums is it seemed to be that people had the opinion that Lee is skint. But one thing that he mentioned in the interview was that any prize money that he got,
donate to charity.
He was going to donate to charity.
Certainly, skin so, man's not going to do that.
Aye, so I mean that's quite an interesting point. I think if you're Lee Priest and you've got a good merchandising base, you're always going to make money.
He's always going to have something to fall back on. Yeah, the guy's been around, as I say, he's been in this sport for 20 years. He's one of the biggest names in the sport. He's, you know, competed with the best names, held his own. He's one of the few guys for the 90s that are left, still probably going to be able to hold his own with the current calibre of today. somebody like that, you know, you'd be very surprised if that particular rumour had held any weight.
That's fantastic. So moving on, we've got an interview with a local guy to us. His name is Ian Sturrock. Not everybody's going to be aware of Ian. He is a guy from the west of Scotland. He's a WNBF world champion. He's a Mr. Scotland, Mr. Britain, top class world competitor. And Ian's a good guy to talk to. He's very, very frank. He's very, very
humble.
Very humble guy. So take a listen to the interview and see what you think about what he had to say.
Ian, thanks very much for talking to us on T-Muscle Radio.
No problem.
For those who don't know, this is Ian Sturrock on the phone. He's an inspiration of mine. He's a top-level amateur competitor. He's competed with the BNBF, WNBF world levels, UKBFF, and universe level competitor. Ian, how are you doing today? Are you all right?
I'm fine, Robert. Thanks very much for including me in this. I'm honoured, mate.
I'm glad to hear it. What you explained to me in the gym, you're quite keen to kind of get back in the scene now that you've got a bit of fire back in your belly. You want to train again. You want to get back into competing after a bit of time off.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, 2011 was a year that should never have happened. I had too much stuff going on in my personal life, but I had it in my head, you know, I wanted to do the universe, and I told people, you know, that I was going to do it. And to be honest with you, my head and my heart were never in it. But I just, you know, this game, when people think you're doing things, you don't like letting people down, which I never intentionally do. But in being like that, I kind of let myself down. I mean, if you know yourself, that 2011 was the worst shape that I've been in 10 years.
Well, I mean, so, the good thing about you, which a lot of people, you can't do a lot of people, as you can be honest with you, because as we spoke in the gym, I said to you, you just weren't yourself, you weren't at your best.
Oh, no.
A lot of people would come and say they were robbed. You're frank and you're honest with yourself, you knew yourself, you weren't your best. But onwards and upwards, you've got fired back in your belly. We'll cover a bit of that later in the interview, and apparently you're not dead.
I've been dead a couple of times, actually.
It's pretty impressive that you've been dead twice and you're still
I keep coming back, you know. After 2011, I said before, a terrible year, and what I did, after that, I had a long break, longest I've ever done in my life, from the gym, from everything, and in doing that, rumours started to spread that, you know, I wasn't well, or, you know, as you probably know better than me, you know, you should have problems, you this and that. But basically, I was taking a break that I should. I mean, that was 9 years in a row. I competed there 9 years in a row. And,
for anybody.
I mean, I was averaging it 4 shows a year as well, so it wasn't just 1 show a year, you know, and travelling as well, as you know. But because I took this long break, obviously, I stayed away from the gym, away from everything, you know, and obviously I'm more, you know, a machine. I did lose a wee bit of size, and not as dramatic as what, you know, some people thought, but because of that, people thought, you know, there must be something wrong with him, you know, because I'm always in the gym, but it wasn't
being that. Being a bodybuilder, instantly you had heart failure.
I mean, as I say, I've had heart failure a few times, a few rumours and stories, but my heart's, I'm fit as a fiddle, you know, I've never ever had any heart problems or anything. As I say, I know what comes in this game, you know, with stuff like that, so I don't, it doesn't upset me, it doesn't, you know, I don't mind talking on the stage, and so, but I took that long break, and it's the best thing I've ever done, because I feel great, I feel, you know, I'm back up to, I'm averaging around about 15-1 or something like that, and looking and feeling great. And the fire, as you say, the fire, you need that fire. If you don't get that, then forget it.
We'll come back to that in a minute. Just for people that don't really know you, because you're well known in Scotland, maybe not so well known down south, where a lot of the audience will be listening from. If you could just give us a few of your highlights of your career.
Right.
Taking back to your BNBF, WNBF days.
Yep. To go back, the highlights of my career are obviously I done the BNBF British 2002. I thought I was a clear winner, you know. Before, I mean, bodybuilders have been in that situation, they think they won and I actually got second. But this, to me, was clear cut. So from there, I get invited to do the World Championships because they said it was so close, you know, we want to go over and do the World Championships in New York. So I agreed, that would be great, I agreed to that. And it was about five, six months later. It was actually in November. Went over to New York, done the light heavyweight, WNBF World Championships, and I won. The guy I was second to, who beat me in the British, came 12th in the world. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that as in being sour grapes or anything like that, but it was just, a great feeling.
You reckon that even shows, even at the NBF level, politics is still an issue?
I think politics can be an issue at all levels at some point. No, not all the time, but, you know, at some point it can. And in this game, you're just going to bite the bullet and go on with it, you know what I mean? But politics do get involved, you know, if it's a gym that's sponsoring the place or a certain, you know, like CNP sponsoring something that's a CNP, you know, sponsor. I think if very, very close, they'd maybe get a nod over somebody else. I'm not saying they would, but these things happen, you know.
Yeah.
To go over and normally beat the guy that beat me, but win, you know, a huge margin compared to him and beat all the Americans, you know.
I believe there was 32 guys in the class
that 36 guys in my class. So it was hard work, it was a big class. Other than that, the Nava Britain, the two wins in Nava Britain were, you know, phenomenal. To people who don't know, I've only done the Nava Britain twice and I've won twice. That's four. 2008 was my best year, memorable year out of them all. I done the Pro Lab with Jimmy Salmon show, which, you know, was a hard show to win as well. I won the overall in that, and then I went to the Nava Scotland, done class four, won overall in that, and then I went to the World Championships in Katarina in Greece, and I came third in the world, and then later on I done the Universe and placed seventh in the Universe. It was a great year, the best year I've ever had. By the way, winning overall Scotland, Nava Scotland, that's a really hard thing to do. A lot of guys, there's a lot of top guys like Graham Parks, guys like that, have never won overall Scotland. Jimmy Salmon's never won overall Nava Scotland. So to get that title as well, I won overall UKBFA Scotland twice, but to get that Nava one was a big thing, because Nava was, when I was coming up in bodybuilding for being younger, Nava was, you know, to me was the hardest one to win, the biggest one to get. So that was, in 2008, that was a great feeling.
Fantastic. And going back to the BNBF, the World Championships, I'm sure you wouldn't mind me asking, but I'd heard through the grapevine that you're potentially a bit of a drugs cheat, and your WNBF win, and after that, apparently they were chasing you for drug tests and you were avoiding, and that's the reason why after that, at that point, that's when you left WNBF, because you knew you were busted. So have you got anything you'd like to kind of cover in that?
I'd love to. I'd done 1, 2, 3 BNBF Britons. So that would take me back to 99 or something, 1998, 1999. I'd done 3 BNBF Britons year after that, and then I'd done the Worlds. And I got polygraph tested, one of the Britons. I don't know if it was the one before the Worlds, it might have been the year before. And then I got polygraph tested over in New York. World Championships, and every winner, it's weight. I was the winner of the light heavyweight, got tested as well, the urine tested as well. So if they were supposedly chasing me for a drugs test, I don't understand that, because I'd done everything they'd asked. I was clean, you know. That's why I competed with the BNBF, because I was clean. I know all about bodybuilding.
You think that rumour, we spoke before, you think that rumour came around because Ricky McCann was then looking for you for a trophy to pass on, because somebody else...
Yeah, what happened was, it was a Scottish Championships, it must have been 2003, Scottish Championships,
yep.
one of the boys that won one of the weight categories was later found to fail on the drugs test.
Okay.
And what he failed on, I don't know, but he failed the drugs test. So the boy that was second to him, get automatically move up to first place. So I knew the boy that had the first place trophy, so he was supposed to give the trophy to me.
Yep.
Give to Vicky McCann to give to this boy. That's all I know that they were chasing me for. But I think one of the other reasons as well this rumour came about was I'd already decided, once I'd done the Win the Worlds in New York, I'd already decided at the beginning of 2003, like, this is it, I'm going to do the NABBA.
Yeah.
Go to NABBA now. And if you check back, I took time off then, to obviously put on more size, and then that's when I started doing NABBA, 2004 or 5. So, you know, and then obviously if they've been not going back and doing the BNBF and then them chasing me for something and now these rumours start, I mean, it's a lot of rubbish. I've done everything they asked me. And if they'd asked me to do a drugs test, I would have done it. You know what I mean?
Yep. So
obviously if I'd started taking some gear after that, I would explain to them, listen, this is what I've done since then. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But never ever cheated in my life, especially with BNBF. You know,
because I mean, it's good to clear that up on the basis of you've won a world title, and
I'm not a fraud. Do you know what I mean? That is plain cheating. But I've moved to New York, and I've done a lie detector test with an ex Chicago cop who was quite frightening. Just that guy was quite frightening. Just you know, and he done the lie detector test. I passed that, you know, the way you should, and then I done the urine test after it, and obviously, I never heard anything after that, but
yeah.
Obviously, you know, so I know it was clean, do you know what I mean? I know I done everything the right way, so that rumour's just, you know, rubbish.
On that point, did you ever come across a lot of guys when you were competing at the very, very top level in the BNBF, WNBF, that you knew were drugs cheats, or you knew were using?
No, I mean, the only one, as I say, I knew of. So the only one I knew of after it happened was what I explained with the thing of exchanging our trophies.
Yes.
I do know that boy personally, but I never knew he was taking anything. I mean, why, you know, that's kind of stupidity. If you're doing a drug test show, you take it and hope, you know, nothing happens. I mean, that's the only one I know of, but at the highest level over in America, I mean, again, we've all heard rumours, such and such, I heard they're taking stuff, they must take this, they must be taking that, but they were all, in my opinion, they were all great athletes, they all looked great, and they all looked, you know, like drug-free bodybuilders to me, so.
Brilliant. So just if we could move on to when you started competing in NABBA.
Uh-huh.
You said you took a bit of time off and you put on some size. How long did you take off? How much size did you put on? Kind of, what did you do different? Or did you what kind of gear did you use? And did you change your training? Did things happen very quickly for you? Did you respond well?
Yep. Well, what I'd done was I'd taken a wee bit of gear before, way way back when I was like 17 and 18.
Uh-huh.
I'd done the I don't know if it was IFBB. I don't want to say that if it was under 18. Britain, I done the WABB. I don't know if you remember them. I done them under 18 Britain as well. So I came across, well, obviously in the gym and stuff like that, and I took some gear for that. But obviously, if I was 19 up until I competed for the BNBF, I was completely, you know, totally drugs free. After the World Championships, that was November 2002, and I think, let's look at this, I've got three Scottish trophies here, and the other ones, 34, first place ones. I think the first one was 2005, so that was like nearly 2 years.
Yep.
And I put one, I competed in the World Championships at just under 13 stone. I was one of the lightest, light heavyweights up there, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And when I stepped on stage in 2005, I think I was at 14.2 or something, you know.
Right, well, bear in mind here, for people that don't know you, You are five foot five and a half.
So, I mean, getting that wee half in, you know what I mean?
I mean, that's well over a stone, and somebody as short as that's that, a huge amount of muscle. And,
well, this is what people expect. When you ask that question, expect you to say a 4 stone heavy or something. These people are just non-realistic, you know. I don't know. I mean, you know yourself, you put 4 pounds a meat in your hand, it's heavy, you know, it's a lot of muscle.
Yeah,
so that was like nearly a stone and a half, you know, just under that. And but it wasn't just size, it was quality, do you know what I mean? It was
in that time when you did migrate to Narva and you did take some gear that you responded really well to it, and it was quality which you gained. It wasn't just a bag of shite.
No, it was all quality, definitely. All quality muscle.
What was it at that time that you used? Obviously, doses is something that's one of those things as well. Ian Starrock's taking by gram a week or whatever.
Well, I'm one of these guys, and this is the God's honest truth. They don't take a lot of gear. I hear the amounts that some boys are taking. It's like, not only can I think, how can I afford that, but how, you know, it's just unbelievable. It's like 3 times the amount, some of them, you know, the amount that I would take. Back then, to put on size, it was your bread and butter, basically, take a test, you know, it's us or a test run or something like that, and dab out or oxy. I just stuck to what worked for me.
Yeah, so just like 200 milligram a deca, how much in milligrams are you talking here?
Well, you're talking about I take a mill a deca, a mill a, you know, a suss or a test. I did go in some training as well. You're talking a mill a each one, maybe every 5 days. That's what I would do.
Right, okay, so maybe 250 milligrams a suss, and maybe 200 milligrams a deca. About every 5 days.
And if it was Danabol, it'd be 10 milligram Danabol, I'd be taking maybe 6 a day. If it was an oxy, I would take an oxy a day. That's the way I done it. Plain and simple. Nothing fancy. Nothing. You know, I'm not that educated.
Uh-huh.
In the ins and outs.
That's good that you admit that, because you hear a lot of up-level guys and pros who absolutely know nothing about it, and telling their opinion and what does this and what does that, whereas you're just saying, listen, that's one of the things that a lot of people, hopefully if you join the forum, will get to find out about you, is that you're a humble guy. And if you don't know the answer, you wouldn't make it up. You'll just say, I don't know.
There's so many guys out there that I don't want to sound big-headed or anything like that, because you know what, that's one thing I'm not, but there's guys out there that know a lot more than mountains more than I know about gear, that I've never probably never will go to the level I've been at.
Of course.
You know what I mean? So this is where genetics comes in as well, stuff like determination, drive.
Definitely. I mean, it's work ethic as well. I mean, that's one of the major things, isn't it?
You know, if you are, I don't know what rumours go about me training, but you ask anyone, I'm a beast in the gym. I put the work in. Especially coming up to shows, and you know, you're getting up on that stage, only you take your cell phone if you don't put it in. It's one thing I do is I train hard.
Okay, so that's good to clear up. So there you go, there's another person who I've spoke to who takes, quite simply, 1 mil of cystine, 1 mil a deca, and grows like a weed. It's all down to the food, because one thing you might find when you come across the forums is people won't believe that. But you know that for the gym yourself, people won't believe it. But
that's up to them. These people, to me, a lot of people think that the only reason he's like that, he must have taken mountains of gear. It's just, honestly, it's no true. If that was the case, then guys that take all this mountains of gear would be up in the Mr. Olympia stage. You know, it's not just about. Don't get me wrong, Ron, I mean, it's important how you do it and stuff like that, but I think people take too much amounts. Where's it all going? Your body can only use so much of it. That's my opinion, you know.
One thing that I did hear a long time ago was that on contest prep, you run basically truss or test and deca all the way through to the show, just basically based on how you're looking, you don't change it. There's no one for changing the test drop and different drugs like that.
No, but honestly, it was just diet. Clenbuterol works a thing with me. Some people have react better to certain things than others.
So what kind of dose of clenbuterol would you use?
I'm glad you
asked. One thing about you is hopefully we'll get some good pictures up and we'll be able to get some good close-ups, but it's hard to appreciate how grainy you actually get until you see you in the flesh close up. I never noticed it. Until I was backstage with you, and I seen you pumping up for when you were guest posing at the Mad or Mr. Scotland that year.
And I
couldn't believe how grainy. That's a look a lot of people don't ever achieve. The water retention for maybe taking drugs like Deca, big talking point. Sorry to interrupt you. So, what about your clenbuterol? How much would you use of that?
Clenbuterol is a thing, as I said. My body just reacts to it like you wouldn't believe. Some guys, there was a couple of guys doing for a show one year that were taking 0.002, whatever you.
Yeah.
I don't know, as I say, I'm not the best scientifically educated person, but some guys were taking like between 4 and 6 a day. The very most I could get to was 2 a day because of the severe cramping I couldn't get my hands off my steering wheel one time. They were locked on my steering wheel. Seriously?
So that was you taking the 20 microgram ones. So it's only the normal dose, 20 micrograms twice a day.
Honestly, it just reacts to my system, and I just can't explain it. And I think it's due to my body seems to not carry a lot of what you've seen me off season as well. I mean, I stay in good condition all year round, and that's no through choice of, hard dieting. You know, I can basically, I'm one of the guys, I can eat pretty much anything I want and still have abdominals,
Yep.
And my body just doesn't seem to naturally hold water. I mean, if I could show you pictures of me when I was, as far back as I was 4 years old and I had abdominals, very little water retention, honestly, God. You know, that wee fat face. I just wish I could get bigger, and going back to the Decker and Swiss thing, some of that was, lack of knowledge as well, me being, I can get ripped easily, so I don't think I can stay on things longer, but as I say, a lot of it was lack of knowledge back then. Going back as far as 2005, right up to 2008, I used Decker for the Britain. I used Deca and Swiss right up to 2 weeks before.
So do you think though that possibly the fact that you just don't pay any attention, it's just not a priority for you, the drugs you're using, and what your mind is focused on is burning the fat, training hard, eating properly, do you think that is actually maybe what's helping you and maybe what's lacking in a lot of people? I sometimes think that as well, that maybe some guys get too hung up on what drugs they're using, the doses, and if maybe somebody's taking something there, they feel they're missing out and they need to take it. So do you think maybe that's a point?
Definitely. It's an important point. I mean, I think people get hung up on what other people are doing. They've read about something and they go, I'll need that. Aldactyl was one. I had a conversation with you once about, how certain ones can flatten you out and you can never get the pump back and stuff like that. And yourself, you commented on my graininess, but thickness, and fullness is because I just don't need, just touch wood, I've never needed these things up until now, And I think, like you were saying, maybe in my disregard, maybe it's a bit ignorant towards, because I can get ripped so easy, with disregard to, some of the things that you're supposed to take, are supposed to not do, like stay on deck and stuff. Maybe that's why I can hold that, so much fullness and thickness. Maybe I don't honestly know.
That's an interesting point. But just going back to something I heard you mention, you said that you just wish you could get more size.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you feel you've struggled with, is just to get enough?
Certain areas, definitely. My biggest weakness in all the bodybuilders out there, is out of sweeping my thighs, sizing my calves. My calves have always had a good shape to them, and they get really ripped, but they're just no big enough. You go to university level and stuff like that. These are things that I need. This is why I've taken a year out. And thighs is a thing. I was in the Royal Marines, and I ran. I was a lot of running. I boxed since I was 6 years old, or, you know, for years and years, a lot of pounding running. I'm not saying that's, you know, the reason I kind of get out of sweep. It's just genetics, genetics thing. But I realise, get the size on that I need to take time away from competing, you know.
Yeah. And would you say, one thing that people might comment on and say, is that I'm just playing devil's advocate here, is that they'll say it's because basically you're using shitty little doses. How the fuck do you expect to grow taking one sus in one deca? So say, maybe that's something that people will take away from this. So
if common sense would tell you, why would I have such a strong back, chest? You know, there's no work for the whole body. Do you know what I mean?
Do you reckon if you were to push on, you could make your back's obviously one of your strongest points.
Yeah.
You reckon that if you were just to push on using the same doses that you could actually, if you were to focus on it, and you would grow your back even more, and just it would just be more disproportionate?
No, my legs do improve with the rest of my body, right? But they've always been, you know, my legs are my weakest point. But they do improve along with my back. I'm not going to let everything else get pure, you know, absolutely awesome, and they just stay where they are. They are improving all the time. But in my opinion, I'm 40 next year, so I work to my strong points. I'm not going to hold back in anything else. Do you know what I mean? But what I will say, and this is coming, by the way, you should take some credit for this, speaking to you in the gym and stuff. I'm going to try, probably picking your brains as well a bit for this. I'm going to try some new things next year when I compete. And I mean that as in gear-wise as well. So I'm going to be reading up and, you know, maybe try the things that I've not been trying. So hoping that will make me even better.
It could be interesting to see what happens there. There are a lot of knowledgeable people. They say I'm no one for... I think it's fantastic how you work, how you've just focused on the basics. As I say, there's always other avenues you can maybe look at, and it's so moving on for that. I mean, you were mentioning you were in the Marines and you boxed for years. You've always kept yourself in shape. We've also mentioned kind of earlier in the show about I had heard through the grapevine from a reliable source that apparently you were at death's door and you had a triple heart bypass. So when I met you in the gym, and I seen you, deadlifting 4 or 5 plates aside, I was thinking, this is pretty impressive for a guy that's just a triple heart bypass.
Well, honestly, Rob, as I say, I've been like death's door twice. I think I've died twice. I think that's the best ones. I've been dead twice.
I think we're going to rename you Ian the Cat Sturrock.
I know. Nine lives. Exactly. I've come back to them too, but to put everyone, you know, let everyone know, all that is absolute rubbish. I've never had any heart problems in my life. My background is all been about, you know, training, boxing. I've been a fitness fanatic 5 years old. You know, I was obsessed at a very, very young age. Actually, you know, it was no natural, you know, but as in watching Rocky and stuff like that. So I wanted to run. I wanted to train. I didn't want to go and might party with pals or anything. I don't drink. I don't smoke, things like that. I'm very, very health conscious as well as wanting to get as big as I can for bodybuilding. So these rumours are horrendous. And I spoke to you before. I've had guys come up to me, you know, and shocked to see me. My health's great. It always has been, you know. So that's
good to know. I'm glad we've cleared that up. So hopefully some of the rumour tweety wives will hear some of that, and they can pass back the information that Ian Sturrock is alive, well, and he's not dead the second time.
It's bodybuilding, isn't it?
You know, it's bodybuilding.
Like, you know, it's bodybuilding. You've just got to accept it, you know, in government.
As you'll see in the forum, and you'll see through the radio show, the co-host Brian Harris, who you know quite well as well.
Brian's a good pal of mine, Brian, right?
he has renamed himself on Facebook Brian the Heart Harris because of the rumours around that he had died of a heart attack and move on now to what's happening. Where are you going to go? So what you mentioned before is you feel it's like a new beginning for you. You've had time off. You've kind of sorted out your personal life.
Totally.
Back in the gym. You seem happy. You're not going to get fire in your belly. So what's next?
Right. Next, by saying a new beginning, the reason I'm saying that is because I'm 40 next year. I'm 40 in February. 17th of February, I'll be 40 year old. So it's like, to me, that's, I'm drawing a line there, and this is my new bodybuilding career. I'll start by doing the NAB of Scotland seniors, and I'll be in the best shape of my life. And if that goes well, obviously I'll be going to the Britain and carry on, you know, as trying to win trophies and championships again.
Put you back in there at universe level and...
I've got 10 years from 40 to 50. So, you know, I've got a lot of time and I'm going to be smart this time. I learned so much from 2011. Being the worst year I've had in bodybuilding, it's also been the best for a learning. You know what I mean? I'll never make that mistake.
You say that it's true that you learn more for your defeats than you do for your victories.
Definitely.
Is that a true saying?
Definitely. I think you have to experience bad years or bad, you know, mistakes, I'll call them, to move on from and never make them again. You know, this is what has happened. And you know, there's one bodybuilder I'd like to thank so much, who I learned a lot from, who made the same mistake as me in 2008. And you remember this? He should never have done the universe, and he did. And he was ill. He should never have done it. And that was the same as me in 2011. And Andy Powell, I spoke to him down at the Mr. England. He'd done the Mr. England with me. And you know, he's such a great guy. He's always backed me, you know, even when we competed against each other. And he's helped me a lot through what I was going through there, and to take my year off, to take the break, do what I'm doing now, and how I feel now. He deserves a lot of credit to it. So thanks, Andy.
So hopefully we'll get in touch with Andy and get him involved, because Andy is also a fantastic bodybuilder.
Right, Andy Pohill, you asked me who's the best bodybuilder, amateur bodybuilder in Scotland, and I'll tell you right now, hands down, it's Andy Pohill. Andy Pohill came third in the universe. I was doing, obviously I was doing it myself, but I was here for Andy as well.
Yes.
As he was for me. He was outstanding, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. He was third in the universe in the hardest class out of them all, in my opinion. He still wasn't Ian Stirrup ripped. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he could get that way. If he was that way, he would win. He knows this, and I've spoke to him. So I hope you don't take offence, Andy. You weren't nailed the way you can be, and he still came third in the universe. That's outstanding.
Excellent. So hopefully we'll see you back up there. And just on that point, I slightly digress here. Talking about some of the kind of top guys in Scotland, and talking about the universe level, one of the guys who posts regularly on the forum is Nick Van Dahl, so how do you think he would fare in class 4, isn't it? He's class 4.
Universe, top 3. He would have been top 3. If he'd have been the universe there, I don't know Nick personally, but I was talking about doing the Scotland when Nick won overall, but the personal things that happened in my life then stopped that. But I was there, I seen Nick, and when he won the Britain, and the boy that he beat in the Britain actually came third in the universe, the Irish boy.
That's right.
Don't get me wrong, he said he didn't prove so much in them, but if Nick was in that universe the way he was in the Britain, he would have been the top. I don't want to come in and say he would win, but he would be top 3 in my eyes. And he's fantastic. He's got the shape. He's got, you know, there's not a lot missing there. So I hope to see Nick again soon.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to catch up with Nick, because Nick posts in the forums regularly. He's just had a wee baby boy there.
Brilliant.
So one last thing, which I know you really, really felt was important that you got across, was Facebook. And I know last year, obviously, you had some personal problems, a bit of a breakup and things went wrong, and then some things get posted in Facebook, and so you'd like to clear a bit of that up.
Aye. It's just the people that, obviously, you know, most of the world goes on Facebook. I was on it for a brief spell and then I came off. But what happened is I had a nasty breakup with my ex a long time ago. And she knew all my pass. I'm not a computer person, but she knew all my passwords, email, and everything. So she hacked in. She actually changed the passwords so I couldn't go and, you know, do anything about it.
Uh-huh.
And she had all my details. She had photographs of me. So she went on Facebook, kept knowing she was me, and sending a lot of messages to people that know me. Obviously knew it wasn't me, but there's people out there that don't know me, and she was sending them, you know, rude messages, like obviously quite funny things saying I was gay and all that stuff. And but you know, this went on for over a year. So I just want to say, anyone, you know, read anything or wrote any messages in that period of time, it wasn't me. It was somebody, you know, you get jealous people, you know, and it wasn't me. And I'm sorry if they got offended by any of it, but I can only apologise. It wasn't me. It was somebody kind of knowing me. So I hope they don't hold that against me or anything.
No, I'm sure not. And hopefully, so that'll get out to quite a wide audience with it. And hopefully we'll see quite a lot in the forum as things going. We'll maybe have to
give you
a bit of re-education how to use the forum.
I'll need to sit down with you for a couple of hours, like. I'll get there, definitely.
Thanks very much for speaking to me, Ian. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been great to get some of the information you've gave. It's
been a pleasure, mate.
Okay, mate, I'll speak
to you
again.
Thanks very much. Well,
sure.
Do cheers, mate.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, so, really to me, there's going to be a lot of people going to listen to that interview and probably...
They're going to doubt something what you said.
But
it's human nature.
We both know Ian quite well.
Yeah.
And we know that Ian doesn't talk shit. Ian's just a humble guy. Like he came across... How Ian came across here is how he has a new life. He's a humble, nice guy.
For a guy to admit that he doesn't have the... greatest understanding, the greatest of knowledge in the workings of the drugs, and then be so blatant as to tell, you know, here's what he's using. You've got to give him a bit of a leeway there, I would have said. You know, you've got to put a bit of weight in that.
I would think so. And I think the kind of main thing that comes away for me is genetics and work ethic and consistency. I mean, that's
how much people underestimate.
That's the main things that's coming away here. I mean, Ian is taking 20 micrograms of clenbuterol. And
body's responding phenomenally.
No, he's taking that twice a day. Generally, people are taking what, maybe 80, 120,
160, even 200 in some cases, you know.
Yep. And he's taking that. And trust me when we say, well, there's some pictures going to be attached to this, and you can see for yourself.
Yeah, crazy.
The guy comes in crazy shredded. One thing to point out that we've noticed before, and it's came up in the forum a few times, is that, not everybody can get striated glutes and striated. Rodded hamstrings. That's one thing that Ian doesn't tend to have. He doesn't have the best cuts in his legs, but when you see it, you can see everything moving about.
It's skin tight.
It's sucked. Vacuum pack.
There's nothing left under.
And I think that's maybe the difference between somebody that's just generally holding a bit of fat and a bit of water, and somebody that doesn't. Two people that don't have cuts. That's a good point to note. Another thing with Ian. To me, was the heart stuff. Now, that's kind of hitting home here. As I say, we've had a few people on the forums and a few people across the boards who genuinely have had issues, including yourself.
Yep.
But for somebody to actually be at the point where, you know, rumours start.
Off the back of them taking a break from the gym. It's a sad state of affairs when you can't take a break without a rumour suddenly breaking you for the triple heart bypass.
Yeah. So, it was a fantastic interview with Ian. I'm really glad you took the time to come and speak to us. So, moving on to our very last interview of the show, we have Paul George. Paul is a guy that's contributed to the forum. He's been around a long time. A really, really nice guy to speak to.
Again, very down to earth.
Oh, really down to earth.
A realist.
He is a realist. And I say... he does have a lot of different things to say, and so I hope you like the interview, and let's have a listen.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, how are you?
How are you doing, mate? Thanks very much for taking the time to speak to me, especially and as well with the contribution you've made to the forum. It's been brilliant.
Not a problem, mate, not a problem. I'm doing my best. Either people read it or they don't, so it's good for me to have a public forum to just vent thoughts and things like that, really. you know, if I can contribute and people can get something from it, then that's good.
Well, that's a good point, actually, because one thing that I'd like to talk about was your video blog, which you did in the run-up to the Grand Prix.
Okay.
I watched that religiously. I thought it was absolutely fantastic to get a kind of insight into it, and having competed myself, you know, you can see the stages of you kind of starting to get a bit quieter and struggling. It was really, really good to watch, and it was also good because you gave an insight into your life as Paul George, and not just the bodybuilder. But what I liked what you said was how, well, you're not Paul George the bodybuilder. It doesn't define you, you're Paul George the person.
Yeah.
If you could just go a wee bit into that kind of philosophy, because that's one thing that was really interesting, I felt.
Well, it is. It's something I do. It's not who I am, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
I think too many people live their lives as a bodybuilder. You know, like it, almost like it's a career. It's a career choice. It defines, without being a bodybuilder, then they're nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I never really wanted to be... The bodybuilding was something I never set out to be a bodybuilder in the first place. I started off playing rugby, so the weights really was a way of me getting bigger and stronger to play rugby. And then I found out I was actually better at lifting up weights than I was at playing rugby, and then I went from lifting up weights to becoming a bodybuilder. So for me, it was just a metamorphosis. The fact I ended up pretty good at it, which is, I think, because I was bloody-minded and stubborn. I think, no, I'm not going to blow smoke up my own ass here, but I'm pretty good at a lot of things. I'm thinking I've spent 30 years practising maybe archery or football or judo or some of the other things I've done in life. I think I might have been pretty good at them as well. But it's just about defining who you are. And I think the thing with bodybuilding, what it helped me with, was my anger management. When I was a young kid, I was quite aggressive and feisty. And I think it just channels that aggression into, you know, a more constructive outlet, you know, that kind of thing. So... That's what I mean in that respect, really, that it doesn't define me. It's the bodybuilder of the end products, you know, Paul George as a person, and everything else is what made the end product.
Yeah. Well, on the note of what you're saying about you think you'd be good at other things as well, and one thing that you maybe kind of, you tend to find, speaking to some guys, is that guys that are really, really good, especially guys that come in top conditions like yourself, they tend to maybe have a, like a tunnel vision type approach, or possibly even a lot of guys like a very addictive personality. Would you say that's something maybe that you see in yourself as a kind of addictive personality? No sense of drugs or alcohol, but that.
One of the reasons that I took up training as such was because I was a pisshead. I did have a problem as a youth with alcohol and other. because I enjoyed the social side of it. I enjoyed getting wrecked, but you know, I buried three of my best mates before they were 30, you know, so I thought this is not a good place to be.
So I mean, on that side of things, talking about burying friends, I mean, not to be morbid, just to make a bit of a tedious link here, but your health, I mean, you're not in your 20s anymore. How's that held up through the years with the training, with everything involved? I mean, has it been all right?
Yeah, health-wise, I've been pretty good. I'm on a mild medication for blood pressure, but that's because it's in the family. My mum and dad both died early on, well, not early on, but they both passed away several years ago, but that was through cancer, through smoking and drinking. So I think that they realistically choked their own poisons, kind of thing. But my health realistically is pretty good. I've no real aches and pains from 30 years of training. So no, I can't complain. I think if I look at some of the people I went to school with that are now in their 50s, I'm standing up a lot better than most of them.
You just have to look around at people in their 30s, mate. And so in terms of bodybuilding, where are you? I mean, are you fully retired? Is it set in stone? You moved into, you happy in your powerlifting at the moment?
I never say never. So they have brought some Masters Olympias back and some other bits and pieces in Europe. So I've hung my sparkly underpants up, I haven't burnt them. So you never know that one day I might just feel the urge to reveal my true colours and step on the stage again. But at this moment in time, I'm happy learning a new venture with powerlifting. I've always trained fairly heavy, but this is just a different departure. It's a lot more of a technical and learning kind of side of things. So it took me the best part of a year and 6 months and 6 weeks to learn how to bench press as a powerlifter. 30 years of bench pressing as a bodybuilder is nowhere near the same. Okay. It's just totally different. It's a different structure. It's a different setup. It's a different bar placement. As a bodybuilder, you bench press to build pecs. As a powerlifter, you bench press to press weight. And 90% of what you're pressing come through your back and your arms, and very little of it actually come through your chest. Yeah. You know, so learning how to do that and being able to tuck my elbows in and to flare my lats and to press up and away and out as opposed to press forward, was a psychological, I can't do that, it'll fall over. I can't do that, I'll drop it on my head. You know, so it took a big leap of faith to kind of let go. I had to deconstruct everything that I'd learned. You know, when you spend 30 years doing something, it takes a little bit longer than I thought it would have done to unpick it and to put it back together. But I'm training with a new kid now, and he's kind of took me even further back to basics, and we seem to be making some progress. I mean, the good thing is that Tam trains alongside us, and she's catching me up. So, you know, it's a big spur. You don't want to be out bench pressed by your wife, do you?
Yeah, just for those who don't know, Tan is your wife. I was going to add that there, just for people who are unfamiliar with your relationship status there. That's good stuff. One major thing which I just noted down, because it was something quite recent, was I don't know if you remember, it was about a spat in Facebook regarding cheat meals, and you get a little bit in about it, and it was on Stevie Crichton's page. And I thought it was fantastic how you had come in and mentioned how well you have two cheat meals a week in your prep and you do all right condition wise.
Well, vaguely. I mean, it was something whether I put it on or somebody else. Actually, I think somebody else may have quoted the fact that I have two cheat meals a week. I mean, but that's me. You know what I mean? I get this label at me quite a lot. People say, "Oh, well, you know, when you're dieting, you do this." And I'm going, yeah, but that's me, and you're not me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been away for a couple of days now, and a bit of a tubby bug while I was away, and I can guarantee I've lost half a stone.
Yeah.
You know, in 2 or 3 days. And the thing is, if I don't eat on a regular basis, I lose weight. So for me to get lean is a given. You know what I mean? All I have to do is think about it, and I'll get lean. You know, but that's just my. But that stops me being a 20 stone monster. You know, because my system, I would have thought by the time we got to 50 that my system may have started to slow down a little bit. You know, my metabolic rate might have kicked in and just, you know, just gradually eating a bit more chocolate or a bit of this and a bit of that. You know, but it hasn't. You know what I mean? If I decided to get lean, I can guarantee I can get my abs out in 4 weeks and I'll be lean and this and that. So my system hasn't diminished in that respect. But like I say, that is me. But I know other people that go from day 101 right down to day 1 and not have a cheat meal, you know, and they do very well with that. I know some people that have a cheat meal and they do well, and I have this and that. It depends how structured your dieting is and how strict you are with that. Now, a lot of people say, yeah, I do this and I'll do that, but I can guarantee that isn't what they do. You know what I mean? They may say they're doing, you know, they're following the routine or they're following this, but it's not necessarily the case, you know. And for me, I find that if I don't put cheat meals in, if I eat too clean, then my body goes catabolic. So I have to put them things in because it just keeps me surviving,
yep.
You know. Whereas other people who may have a slower, heavier system, they have to eat chicken and rice and broccoli and turkey for 200 days a year to get lean. Because their system won't allow them to do it in any other fashion. Now, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and no one person's right and no one person's wrong. But when somebody comes out with a definitive statement that this is the only way you can do it, then I have a problem with that. And I think that's what you're alluding to.
I believe the statement was, if you have cheap meals during prep, you should take up ping pong. So I was just wondering if you're planning to take up ping pong anytime soon.
No. No, because I can't see over the net.
Okay,
being 5 foot three and the ping pong net's a bit taller, so no, I'm not taking ping pong up.
The Chinese are good at ping pong, so I mean, maybe they must have these steps or something. We could maybe sort you out with something along
the way. I think a bat might help. So I can deflect these frivolous statements. Be a lot easier.
I mean, so can I just move on to the cheat meals, just kind of slightly stepping into the actual contest prep? And so you could just, I mean, how long was did your prep go? Because I mean, you were always in kind of reasonable shape, and as you say, and getting lean for you, it's just a given. It's going to happen. It's just a case of how to best do it, how to not lose the muscle. So, how long did your contest prep last? I mean, when did you start?
Contest prep for me can be anything between 8 weeks to 12. Something like that. Depending on how the system's going, then I can be either really shredded or I can be tight. Depends what you're looking for, really.
How did that go? Do you tend to find that you grow into a diet? I mean, a lot of people seem to, once they get that kind of fire, they click in right at prep time, they kind of grow into the start of their diet. Is that something you found yourself?
I think it varies depending on where you're coming from, to be fair. Off-season wise, it depends how far off-season you are and how much work you have to do. I was never really off-season, like you say. I stay fairly lean most of the time. I would tend to always try and grow into a show, although I'm never enough to actually do what I intended to do. So conditioning was always a thing, so it depends really where I was coming from and what the show was, and whether I was going to get nailed or just really, really tight.
You would be willing to share with us some of your contest prep and what you would use performance enhancing wise, because I know from speaking to you via text that you're not a big user, and what a lot of people are surprised about, tend sometimes not to believe on the forums, is how little some guys actually use at the top level.
Yeah.
So I mean, it'd be good, I think, if you could give a little bit of that, a bit of information along that, those things.
Yeah, I mean, the first probably 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that, the basics, really, a bit of sus and a bit of deck, and by that it would be probably a mil and a half of the deck and probably a mil of sus, something like that, and then switch to fast acting one, propanase, trenbolone, bit of Winstrol, and that would be pretty much it. That's what I would run in on.
In terms of sus and deca, you're saying like a mil and a half, so maybe like 200, 300 milligrams of deca, and then a bit of same as sustenance.
That would probably be as high as I would go, to be fair. It'd be a mil a deca and a vial of 250 sus. That'll be twice a week.
All right.
Or whatever that works out as. So 1 mil a deca and a vial of sus, that'd be that. And then maybe like on a Monday and a Thursday. So that'd be my first four, 6 weeks, something like that. And then trenbolone and propanate, Winstrol. And that'd probably be me coming in then. And then the rest of it will be down to like your T3, T4s. But that would be it.
Really is
real simple.
From what I gather, you were never a person that used growth hormone, insulin?
Never used insulin. I've won 4 world titles. I'm once in British and national one before I used growth. I didn't use any growth up till probably 2004, maybe, the year I won the pro card, or it may have been after that even. But I'd done most of my big wins, my amateur stuff, without using it.
Is it something you feel made a huge difference? Because obviously it's something that, I mean, you see in the forums, sometimes you feel as if guys think that it's something you must have. But I mean, that's a good point you've made. You won all your big titles without it. And thereafter, do you feel that it made enough difference to you in hindsight?
What it did do was made me a little bit more fuller. I think as a lightweight and a middleweight, I wasn't quite as full as I could have been. And I think that's what the growth gave me while I was dieting, because my condition got better towards the end of my career. I never started out as lean as I finished, if you know what I mean. There was a progression, maybe not so much in size, but if you go back to when I first started, my body definitely progressed into getting leaner and harder. And I think what the growth did for me was just to keep me a bit more fuller, a bit more volume, if you like. But that then, you see, that was, I probably never took more than 2.5 IU every other day. You know what I mean? And I know guys take a lot more than that. So I could never afford lots of gear, and I could never afford lots of growth, and I've never took insulin at all. So
one thing I know that people will ask the question is, obviously, when you say you're using 2.5 IU a day, as was it pharmacy?
Every other day. That was every other day, not every day.
Every other 2.5 IU every other day. Okay.
Yeah.
Was it pharmaceutical grade stuff? Because
yeah.
That's the question people ask. It was pharmaceutical grade stuff. No, that's really good. So what about your last week coming in? Because that's one thing, I mean, looking around at some of the guys, you know yourself, Paul, you can destroy 12 weeks work in 12 hours with the last week and the last day.
It doesn't change. My gear doesn't change from 6 weeks out to the last week.
Yeah, but in terms of just your last week, can I move into slightly aside for the actual gear side then? Go into just what your last week looks like. I mean, I know a bit for your video blog, but in terms of your last week, in terms of like stopping cardio, depletion, carbon up, I mean, how does your last week normally look?
It changes very little. I try to get stage ready 10 days out. And if I'm there or thereabouts, then all I will do, I only ever depleted once, and that was in 2008 when I did the NABBA Universe, and I depleted down and then filled up. And I thought, to be fair, I myself thought I looked really good. I thought I looked real full, probably the biggest I'd ever been on stage, but without the super tight cuts.
Okay.
But I liked the pictures and I liked the way I looked, but I didn't get the results, or I didn't get the position I deserved, I thought. So that's just my thought. So the judges are there, so you can't really disagree with the judges. So that's the only time I ever really depleted down. And to be fair, I probably did feel a little bit fuller, and I would have probably gone on and done a little bit more of that kind of stuff. In retrospect, but what I did do, like everybody else, is if you didn't win, then you fall back to what you know. So the next show I did after that, I probably just went back to basics, which would have been, you know, just keep your carbs low and then just eat up on the day.
On the actual day, what's your wake-up on the day?
I'm just trying to think now, because the last time I competed was a little while ago, so... and it always kind of changed slightly, because I tended to look in the mirror a lot and go, right, okay, how do I look today? How do I feel today? But the last week, I would probably have started to water load on probably the Monday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and say I'm competing on the Saturday, I would have stopped drinking on the Friday. I never went above 5-6 litres of water a day.
Okay.
And I know some people say, oh, you've got to have 8 or 10 or 12. I just never felt I could get rid of that amount of water. I just felt really watery and sluggish, you know what I mean? So I kept it to about 5 or 6 litres. I never really saw any need to put any more of that in it. I would take probably 3 to 4 grams of soluble vitamin C to help flush the water out.
Yep.
My meals would be pretty much the same. It would be my absolute... out of the balls to the walls would be fish and rice, and that'll be 5 or 6 meals of fish and rice a day, some eggs in the morning and maybe an odd protein drink during the day, but both of the time it would be fish and rice. And I used to get it from Aldi, 2000. Bassa fillets was $1.99 for 5 fillets. So I'd go in on a Monday and then a Wednesday and a Friday and buy about 4 or 5 bags of fish. And then I would probably have, I'm trying to think of how much rice I would have. Probably about 150 grams of rice per meal kind of thing.
That's the cooked weight?
Yeah. So that would just be fish and rice, with a little bit of Nando's Piri Piri sauce or some Tabasco sauce, something like that, you know, to give it a bit of flavour.
You're copying me here, mate. That's exactly what I would do.
Yeah, it tastes like shit, but it does you good, so, but there, you know. So.
I think the best way to describe it is disguising bland with spice is the way
I can. Exactly right. I mean, the thing is, you know, food doesn't have to be bland. It just has to be clean. You know, I mean, one year I went dieting down and I was going through tubs and tubs of mustard.
Right.
Just because I couldn't have anything else. I need some flavour. So one year I got addicted to mustard, and then the year after it was something else, and the year after it was something else. Every diet I've done has always been different because your palate changes and your mindset changes, and you think, what am I going to have this year? You know, what's going to be, what little surprise is going to have manifest itself into your head? You know, so, you know, it doesn't always have to be the same. It can be different, but as long as you're getting the same result, you know, it doesn't matter what you start your diet on, as long as at the beginning you're losing weight and it's coming down and it's consistent, yeah. You know what I mean? And if that's the case and you just stick with that, as long as you're putting the effort in, you're doing the cardio, you're doing your work and you're doing everything else, your weight will come down, the fat will come down, then just stick with it. Too many people go halfway, keep going, and then they start fudging it. Oh, I'll just change this, I'll just mess this around, I'll just play with this. You know what I mean? And they sabotage themselves. You know, the thing is, if it's working, stick with it. It'll, you know, if you've got your halfway through and it's working, why change it? And if you got to the last week, why change it? You know, just everybody just seems to think if there's a magic pill, if I just twiddle this, then I'll be brilliant. You know, and if you can look in the mirror 10 days out or 7 days out and you look bollocks and you're nice and tight and dry, why do you need to change anything else?
Yeah, well, I think at that point, that's where a lot of guys think, okay, I need to be that extra, you know, that extra bit drier, extra bit tighter. So
that's when you need to talk to your mates, isn't it? That's when your best friend comes down and says, right, you need to eat up a bit more now, or you're going to go catabolic, or you don't need to lose anymore, or you can stop doing cardio. If you want to be successful, you have to surround yourself with people that have been successful.
Yep.
Or they know what success is about, because they're the ones that are going to stop you. You know, a mate of mine the other day came down to have a look at me. Not to have a look at me, I'd look at him, and he was competing and was going on about this and that. And he notoriously sabotaged himself, and I've said this to him before. So I had to pull him aside. I said, look, I've pointed him to a mirror. There was me and this guy stood in the mirror. I said, you see him? I said, he's the guy that's going to beat you. I said, nobody else, him. And he knew what I meant by that, the fact that he does sabotage himself. He will twiddle with things. Oh, I'll just do this, I'll just do that. You know what I mean? So you have to stop people. Just say, look, you look good, just stay as you are. You don't need to do anything else. You know what you're doing, you know what your plan is, just stick to it.
Well, I mean, is that something that you've learned through time, or did you find yourself maybe kind of earlier on in your career? I mean, ever getting to the point, maybe just before a contest, thinking, ah, shit, I need to drop water, maybe using some aldactone or something like that.
I've never used slow K.
So I mean, that's something you've just basically
I'm just fortunate that I've never had to. You know what I mean? It's just. Drugs and enhancing performance things, all them kind of things, it's like alcohol, and everybody responds to different ones in different ways. And I was pretty fortunate, I think, that when I was starting off and I got advice by certain people who said, oh, you know, if you try this and do this and look at that, I wasn't far off the mark when I started. So for me, it wasn't a big... a big adventure, you know, experimenting with lots of things, because I was pretty much there or thereabouts anyway. All I needed to do really was learn how to train better and how to diet better. And the chemical side of it, it hasn't really varied much from day one to day, you know, day 362 million years later on. You know, whereas I know a lot of guys that they've the body type works differently, they react differently to certain substances. You know, so they're trying to counteract one with another one with something else.
Also, one kind of other factor to tie in with that was what some of the stuff you spoke about in your blog with the psychological issues around about food. Do you think, let's just say for instance, Paul George was to come back next year, year after, to do the Masters Olympia, do you think that if you were to try, I mean, how is the psychological things? I mean, do you think if you were to kind of overcome some of that, be able to eat even more and even push on with some of the doses, do you think you could be coming back as a much bigger, much better, more rounded Paul George?
I don't know. I don't know that one. I will only know that when I decide to come back. And if I decide to push the dosages a little bit further, and it depends on other factors, you know, where I am in my life.
Yeah,
at the moment, I'm in a happy place. I don't feel I need to get back on stage. I don't think I have anything to prove by getting back on stage.
Yep.
The only reason I would get back on stage is because I wanted to, and because I thought, just to see if I can, you know, at a more mature age. I have no illusions about, unless I was competing against people of my own age and things like that, that I would win anything. You know, I know Flex Lewis quite well, and I'm never going to beat him or Seth Farosh or Kevin English or any of the other 220 guys, 212 guys. You know, I've competed against Sami El Haddad, and he came second in New York the other week, was it, behind Kevin English?
Yep.
You know, so these are guys that I know and I know well. So my physique isn't going to match them. You know, he probably wouldn't have done at my best. So I'm not going to do in my 50s.
Just to throw another name in the hat, I spoke to Lee Priest this morning. And he is currently trying to get back into the IFBB and do a 212 class. So there's another name for the group for you.
Yeah, but I mean, no disrespect to Lee Priest, but he's been out of the game for 4 or 5 years now, you know, and he's getting on a bit. So, I mean, he's still probably 15 years, 20 years younger than me. Well, maybe not 20 years, but he's a good 15 years younger than me, I think. You know, I think he's going to find it difficult because I think unless you are competing constantly at that level, it evolves and it moves on. It's like being a football player or a rugby player, which is my background. You know, if you get an injury and you're out for a season or a season and a half, when you come back in, you know, that match fitness isn't there, you know, and the game's moved on a pace and other people have come in. And I think that's what Lee'll find, even though, you know, some of the best genetics on the planet for getting big and for getting this, it's, you know, he's had injuries and he's got this and that going on. So when he steps on that stage, you know, unless he brings something different, you know, to the stage, you're going to go, yeah, it's Lee Priest. Yeah, I remember him when he was good. You know, for them phenomenal arms that he's got and everything else that he's got, he'll have to bring a different package. You know, and that's the way the game's moving on. You know, it's like Dexter. You know, Dexter Jackson, brilliant physique, but every time he turned up, he was Dexter. And if he was slightly, if his condition was slightly off, then they go, oh, Dexter's off. Even though he has striated glutes and this, that, and other, if he wasn't bang on, he was off. And then he got marked down as being off. But when you compare him to other people, you know, he was awesome.
Uh-huh.
So it's a fine line to, you know, to step away and then to come back and think, you know, what can I bring to it? What's the challenge for doing it? You know, so.
Okay, well, that's a good take on it. That's some food for thought there. Well, I'm totally missing an issue here about the psychological food issues. I mean, that's something that I think the food issues you had in your season.
Oh, yeah, go on.
It was on your blog, the video blog you made. I don't know if you could just give a bit on that and how things are with that. Have you kind of, is that kind of eased off because now you don't see yourself maybe as Paul George, somebody who's, you know, bodybuilding, you're more powerlifting. Has that helped?
To a degree, I still don't have the biggest appetite in the world, but I have a lot more food on my palate. We've just been away for the week up to Northumberland, and we had fish and chips and we had pie and we had potato hash and all the bits and pieces that you normally have when you go on holiday. And I didn't feel any bit of guilt whatsoever about tucking into anything. But I still have a massive appetite, but I don't have any real aversions now to food. So it's not like I can't eat them or I shouldn't eat that. It's like, you know, certain things react with me slightly differently than I would like. The windage factor is a lot higher than it used to be. But certain foods do that anyway. But I'm getting better.
You think that the kind of issues you had and talking about like the guilt you felt, do you think that's one of those things that also kind of ties back into the kind of addictive personality thing?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's I'm not going to... I wouldn't put myself onto a psychiatric table to try and analyse what the whys and the wherefores, because I don't think it's healthy to do that. But I think in some respect, I did back myself into a corner and I did build a rod for my own back, where when you're successful at something and you're good at something, then you do anything you can to retain that success.
Yeah.
And I think when I was successful, then I came along in the bodybuilding scene, I brought something that was different, you know, good symmetry, shape, conditioning. Because I think at that point in time, there wasn't as much of it then as there is now. And I think that's why I did so well with the British and the European and the world stage as an amateur, because I did take condition and shape around and I got rewarded for it. So anytime you are successful, you're gonna keep doing the same thing. And I think because I was, I think, well, how long since that now? I think I did my first show in 1982. So we're now in 2012. So for 30 years, for 30 years, I've been kind of looking at what I eat, why I eat, you know, and analysing it in that kind of respect. So I think 30 years of pondering anything, you can have some psychological reverberations going on. Like I say, it took me over a year to change my bench press style, you know, and that's just a mechanical thing. So I think 30 years of something that's psychological may take a little bit longer to address fully. But yeah, I'm in a good place with it. You know, I'm fortunate that Tam's a really good cook. She likes to make me a nice thing to eat, and I can't refuse eating it because she'll punch me. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to slap off a 200 kilo deadlifter, so I make sure I clean the plate.
I think the calluses wouldn't help either.
No, it's good. All good.
So, well, Paul, thanks very much for speaking to me. That was really, really informative. Some really, really good stuff there. And,
cool.
Hopefully we'll hear back from you soon in the forums.
Yeah, mate. Thanks for following me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you, mate. Cheers.
Well, mate, one thing that comes out of that for me is that I'm sure you can relate to it. As the addictive personality type thing.
Absolutely. It seems to be a common place in many guys in the sport. I don't know whether it attracts them or maybe it's a facet of the sport, you know, that just seems to be like a...
Well, I think so. I mean, even listening back to what Ian was saying about his personality, how he used to run, and how once he starts something, it's just tunnel vision.
Absolutely, he's on the track.
And even like who we talked about during the programme, Stevie Crichton. I mean, an awesome bodybuilder.
Phenomenal.
The condition he comes in is unbelievable, and he's another one that's got that kind of addictive type personality.
As he admits himself. Yeah.
So, do you think that's something that really, to be top level in this sport, you kind of have to have a bit of that?
I think there's probably an element there, because, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, regardless of what people think of the sport that we do, you do have to be able to separate yourself from reality, normality,
that's
to
it.
A certain extent. It does take a special kind of person to be able to block out life to the extent, make the kind of sacrifices, without it making it sound like a kind of a hardship. I don't mean it like that, but certainly you're putting yourself in a mentally and physically different place that you would certainly from many other sports. Not to place it above any other sport, but you know, I'm just saying, it's
definitely
not normal. You know, you're taking your body to regions where it's not comfortable.
No, certainly fucking ain't comfortable.
No. all for the sake of a plastic trophy.
Aye,
a namesake.
And being covered in Marmite,
yep,
and parading in front of another 600 guys.
Yeah, in your pants.
In a banana hammock.
That's to strain and gum.
What a sport.
Yes, love that.
Another thing that came out of it was another guy who just says, oh, I take one sauce, one deca. Is that how many mil once us, one Decker.
Yeah.
So yeah. Again, it's just so unimportant. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It harks back to, again, you know, the days when these kind of things were measured in doses like that, because it was generally all that was available. Obviously, we've got the modern day, the underground labs, you know, the super dosed gear, you know, things are ranging up to 500 milligrams per mil, you know,
yeah,
from as little as 25 milligrams per mil with certain products. So really, you know, the emphasis is there on why we keep asking these guys when they're saying mil, could you tell us in milligrams, so that it's got some sort of relevance to the listeners, yeah, of today.
But it does show as well, I mean, how little importance
it does.
And I'll get back to Lee Priester, I remember he was talking about doses and stuff like that and gear and everything, and he says it just wasn't something. When I used to sit in California and back in the day, it just wasn't something we spoke about. It just, we talked about training, we talked about diet, and there was very little conversation about the actual gear. It was just so basic, so like, so true, little part of it. It just, there wasn't much to talk about.
Yeah.
So it's really one of the things that shines through with a lot of people, and you kind of wonder, like Ian said, even guys like ourselves, do we put too much relevance on that side of things? Do you know what I mean?
Certainly. I know I've certainly been guilty of it, and, you know, obviously since my heart problems at the start of the year, you know, that's turned things around for me from that point of view. You know, I think a lot is born these days of as generations have gone on, more and more people are wanting a shorter cut. They want a reason why they don't look as good as the guys, and they just basically don't want to hear the answer. It's hard work, it's dedication, it's consistency.
It's genetics.
You know, it's genetics. Yeah. If, I mean, some
tough
guys.
Fucking shit.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, if it's meant to be, you know, if you're going to be a fantastical, if you're going to reach the pinnacle of this sport, you're going to know in a very short period of time.
Yeah. Well, it's like Ian said, they had abdominals for 4-year-olds.
Exactly. Exactly. Sure. I mean, let's face it. You know, in the west of Scotland, you know, kids don't have abdominals for 4 years old. They've beer bellies.
So that's good. One other thing that Paul said, that, well, we've spoke about in the past, is the fact that he used 2.5 IU of GH every other day.
Every other day.
Which is basically maybe half. No, well, I suppose technically a quarter of those, because maybe everybody uses maybe about five IU mark per day.
Very, very commonly, 2.5 IU every other day is what some people would regard as a female's dosage or using,
yeah,
it. So, you know, even if you look at it from that point of view. Again, you know, people have their varying opinions in this, but let's just say, for instance, you know, the quality of the Pharma GH is supposed to be so much better, obviously, than the, you know, the generic copies, and you know, it just goes to show the difference in effectiveness.
So I mean, for yourself or for anybody listening, taking that in account, do you think it may be worth for people to maybe take a thought of, well, I mean, I could spend X amount on UGL stuff, I could maybe spend three times as much on pharmaceutical stuff, but only need to use a quarter, so technically you're actually cheaper.
I think, you know, there's an argument for both sides there. There's another corner of that argument where they could say, you know, the higher quality brands of the UGL market, you know, which obviously are, you know, standouts in their own.
A bit more expensive.
Yeah, they're typically more expensive, yeah. But then the argument would be, so would you be better off to spend your money there, which is kind of middle of the road? So it's going to cost less, you're getting more for your money. Ultimately, how do you know what you're getting, because it's still a UGL at the end of the day? Or are you just better just, you know, biting the bullet, you know, spending the money, you know, the top end money for the work, be a pharmaceutical grade product, and as you say, you know, using a smaller amount over a longer period of time, and, you know, ultimately, will it work out cheaper in the,
yep,
end? You know, the answer's, you know, probably yes.
I mean, all the answer is, how about just don't use it at all? Because, I mean, look at what Paul's saying. I mean, he won all his biggest stuff he never used, growth.
Mm-hmm. I do think that's certainly a point. I think there's far too much emphasis put on it,
yep,
in this day and age. I mean, I know you could rhyme off countless guys that we know that have won world titles, European titles, guys that have reached pro status, you know, without the use of it. You know, absolutely.
And as well, I mean, It's so hard as well to pinpoint any kind of effects. I mean, you could say, like Paul George was saying, over time his condition improved and stuff like that. So some people might pin that down, and that's the growth hormone that has made, yeah, his skin thin out, and maybe it has been.
Or it could be.
But then it could be a case of, because you're dieting for so long,
yep,
the fat cells just get totally obliterated.
Absolutely.
They just don't get a chance to rehydrate.
I think one of the common issues with growth hormone as well is, I mean, for when some guys are over there saying, you know, they'll, I know in some cases where they've said, you know, I'll use pharmaceutical grade growth hormone for when I'm dieting, for when I'm contest prepping, because I want the best of everything when I'm contest prepping. And therefore, that logic leads them to believe that as their contest prep's going on, obviously, you know, this is working much more beneficially. But who's to say, as you just said, you know, they wouldn't have looked like that at the end of it anyway. Are they going to be brave enough to take it out and run it without it? Probably not. You know, mentally, you know, we're all guilty of, oh, no, no.
And the issue with that is every prep it snowballs and you've added an extra thing. Absolutely. You're afraid to take it out and you end up with a...
Overcomplicated mess.
A complicated mess. You don't know what's affecting what, when and where.
Absolutely.
One last point on Paul's interview. To me, this is the highlight for me, was how he says, I aim to be ready 10 days out. You see it all the time, people chasing their arse. The final week, it's like, I've got to drop all this water, or you know, I've still got a bit to lose, and I'll be all right. A few days to go. To me, what he says is absolute gold. Being ready 10 days out. What's your thoughts on that?
I totally agree with that.
Working with you,
10 days or more in some cases. I mean, as you know with yourself, the window was always 2 to 3 weeks. If we could have you there or thereabouts, the 2 to 3 week out mark, you know, it gives us so much opportunity to do whatever, whether it be relax, whether it be just concentrate and gliding in, you know.
Just for those listening that don't know, Brian actually does my prep for me. Kind of standy guy, but he's quite good at it, so sorry.
Obviously, you know, 10 days out is a comfortable number. At the end of the day, a week and a half out for sure. Personally, you know, I'm usually ready 10 days after.
But, you know, well, that's because you're a do as I say, not as I do guy. That's your motto.
One day I'll get my timing right. But yeah, no, in general, that is, if more people could aim for that, you know, the amount of stress, as you know yourself, you know, the amount of stress that takes off you, the weight. And from my point of view, as someone who's helping people, it's a huge weight off my mind as well, because the job's essentially done.
And it's a bit like he says, the job's done, you look good, just so flowing. Therefore, don't change anything, like Paul says, don't change anything, don't start twiddling things. If you look good, just maybe start your water manipulation, some water, some vitamin C,
basic stuff,
a bit more food, and then just glide into the show.
Absolutely. There's too much emphasis on this, you know, right, let's make a super complicated last week, let's do a 7 day deplete and a 3 day super carb up and insert all sorts of diuretics at certain points and then fuck up.
Yeah.
And then that's I've been guilty of doing that myself, you know, obviously, but you know, by and large, you know, you learn from your mistakes, should do. And that's probably the best route to take. At the end of the day, you know, most last week alterations, you know, you're trying to change something to get 2% better, and ultimately you end up making it 10 or 15% worse.
Yep.
You know, if you look fantastic a week out, 10 days out, 2 weeks out, what's the point in changing it? You know, take that package to the stage, because it's going to look 10 times better when it's up there, tanned up, dry, and under the vision of the lights.
Exactly. I think we'll kind of wrap up at that point for now. Hopefully you've really enjoyed listening to that. Brian and I were nervous about doing the first show.
Absolutely.
Obviously,
we'll
no lie about that. No, we're honest guys, but I'm pretty happy with how that went.
That's pretty
so good. I mean, we're going to go away, we're going to take some feedback from you. If you want to get in touch, just get through the website, which is, I'll repeat again, is testosteronemuscle.co.uk. There's a blog attached, there's a Facebook. Get in touch on robert@testosteronemuscle.co.uk. Hopefully we'll be back again in a week or two. We'll keep you updated on what's coming next, but assured we will be back and we'll have some more content. So thanks very much for listening.
Thank you.